Accession number 30401, Mr. Ron Batchelor, Reel 3. Now, how did you feel when you were at this transit camp, when you got the news you were going to Korea? How did you feel about that?
Well, I didn't think much about it, really. No, you know, as I say, we was brought up during the war, so it was just a natural thing to do. And we was the advance party, which went from Birkenhead.
Advance party of who?
Of the troops going onto the ship, going out to Korea.
So you weren't going out with a unit, you were going out as a draft to join?
Well, we was all a big bunch of signals, and there was other regiments on there as well. But we was the advance party onto the Empire Pride. We boarded at Birkenhead.
And what did the advance party have to do?
Well, nothing really. I mean, we just went on the advance party, and then the next morning we came round to Liverpool and all the rest of the troops got on.
Now, this would be September then, because that's when you...
September, yeah.
That's when the novelty picking was.
Yeah.
So, what was the trip like?
Well, it was 6 weeks it took us. And I arrived at...
Now, what was the trip like, though? I mean...
It was quite good. It was a bit rough going through the Bay of Biscay.
What was your mess deck like?
Very crowded. We had hammocks.
And how did you get on with them?
All right, okay. It was a bit packed. When we got to the Indian Ocean, well, I suppose we better go before that.
Yeah, I mean, how packed was it? I mean,
well, you was near enough touching one another. You know, you just had your rope on there and the rope on there. Then the hammocks were near enough, I would say about 2 foot apart, really. By the time you got into them, you was near enough touching one another.
Was it stuffy down there?
It was stuffy, yeah. Yeah.
Did it smell?
I think it did.
You wouldn't notice it, would
you?
No. So you were down there. Now, what about seasickness?
Myself, I didn't suffer from seasickness.
So you were lucky. But
there's quite a lot of them were seasick.
That kind of helped conditions.
No, it didn't.
What was the food like?
Do you know what? I can't remember.
Now, so which way did you go? It's a long time.
Yeah, we went through the Bay of Biscay, then through Suez Canal. We stopped at Port Said.
Did you get ashore at all?
We got ashore at Port Said.
What do you think? That was your first foreign country, wasn't
it? Yeah, yeah. It was filthy old.
In what way?
Very smelly and very dusty.
So you didn't like it at all?
No.
And where then?
And then we went through the Suez. Then we stopped at, I can't remember if it was Aden or... I know we stopped at Aden and Colombo, but I don't know which one comes first.
Aden.
Is it? So we stopped at Aden.
What was that like?
Went ashore there. Oh, that seemed quite good, actually. I always remember... it's like a castle, you know. There. You know, the big blocks. Always remember that. Of these buildings.
And what did you do when you were ashore at Colombo?
Well, just walked around, really. Just to stretch your legs.
Colombo? What about there?
Yeah. Yeah, we stopped at Colombo.
But nothing that much.
I can't remember. No, we only just, you know, walked around, really.
Then any training while you were going on the ship?
You know? Oh, yeah. Rifle training on the back of the
ship. For you as well?
Yeah.
Well, how'd you do it?
They used to have us off the back of a ship, you know, shooting.
What at?
They used to throw things out. I can't remember what they were, actually.
Well, some kind of target they lobbed
over. Some kind of target they lobbed over the side.
Did you improve at all?
No.
Anything else about the voyage?
Well, we stopped at Hong Kong. Well, Singapore. We had shore leaves there, not long. The one that I remember at Singapore, we walked along to Raffles, the the big hotel there.
What was that like? Did you get in?
No. It was just walking around really. Then Hong Kong. That was only just shore leave. Had a look round Kowloon. We wasn't there long enough really. Was there one day and sailed the next virtually.
Then so where did you finish up?
And then we arrived at Kure.
That's where you finished, was it?
Yeah, Kure.
That's Kure in Japan.
Yeah, arrived there on my birthday.
So that's late October.
October 25th, did dock there.
Now what happened?
Went to a transit camp there.
That's the big Kure camp, is it?
Yeah.
And what was happening there?
Well, there, they had us doing commando training there. And you used to have to do 15-mile route marches in full battle order.
Now, what was this commando training like? Do you remember it in more detail? Because a lot of people talk about that.
Yeah, we used to... you go over all these obstacles, you know, like ropes, walls. When you see it on the television, you know, when soldiers doing going up these nettings and things like that.
Assault course?
Yeah, assault course, yeah. And then you used to do 15-mile route marches in full battle order. And so that was quite...
How tough was it?
Very tough. But I'll tell you what, that was the fittest I felt in my life.
So it worked?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Anything else you were doing at Kure? Any sort of wireless training?
No.
Are you still just with a draft, really? You're not assigned to a unit. You're all Corps of Signals, but you haven't been given to anyone yet?
No, not yet, no. No, that wasn't until we got to Korea.
Did you get out of Kure? Did you get to go around Japan or to anywhere while you were at Kure?
Well, we didn't used to go out much, really. We stayed mainly in camp. There was a bar there. We used to have a beer. And they was asking for volunteers for the SAS there as well.
Now, did you think of that?
I applied for it.
Now, why on earth did you do... Well, that shouldn't be a surprise. I mean, that's not fair. Why did you apply for that?
I don't know, really. And they wouldn't take me because I was National Service.
Now, you don't know why you did it?
No. I just thought it would be an adventure. I don't know why I volunteered for it.
But they didn't give you any tests or anything?
Oh, no. As soon as they said I was National Service, they said, right, that's it. You're no good to us because the time you've done your training, you'd be time to go home.
So what happened next then? How long were you at Kure? You got there then
I was only there a few days, really. Then they shipped us off to Korea.
So that would be November?
Yeah. They put us on an old steamer, and I know we had to stop halfway to take on coal, and I think it took about 3 days to get to Korea.
How many were aboard it?
There was only about 200 of us, I think, and we arrived at Pusan. That was the only time I felt seasick, was on that boat. Because the mess deck was right on the aft end. And what with the ship going around like that all the time, you felt sick. But that was the only time. Then we got on the train, when we got to Pusan.
Now, what were your first impressions of Pusan? What do you think?
Just these big sheds, really, there. Like, you know, ordinary docks. And they just moved us out. And... took us onto a train. Then we went up to just south of the Imjin River.
Now, what was that? What had that journey like? You know,
it was an horrible. There was horrible carriages, all wooden seats, and I think we was on them for about nearly 2 days going up there. I can't remember the place where we stopped, where the train stopped, and then we got on lorries to Div HQ. But I can't remember what that name of that place where we stopped at. I can never remember that. Well, anyway, we arrived in Div HQ. the night Speakman won his VC. And that was, I think it was the 4th of November. I think it was the 4th. And there was, we was what they call on red alert, ready to pull out.
Now, just to correct something, that I thought you joined in 50, but you joined in February 51. So yeah. All the dates are knocked on one from whatever one, I've been saying. You got out there in 51, because that's when Speakman won his feast.
That's it.
That fits perfect.
Yeah.
So what was it? So you were behind the. That was at the Koh Ang San area. He was on hill
355. Three, I ended up on that hill.
Right. Yeah. So that's you'd moved up to that Koh Ang San area.
Yeah.
Now what happened really? So you'd got to the divisional HQ.
Yeah. Well, then they said we're on red alert, and that was the night to speak and won his VC. Then the next day, they said we was moving up to our brigade. I was in 28th Brigade.
Now, did you know that?
No, I didn't know that at the time.
So you were.
So it was only the next morning we was posted to which was K Troop of the Royal Signals, which was 28th Brigade.
And what was K Troop?
Well, that was Royal Signals, you know. Wireless operators, linesmen,
and they were the people who ran 28th Brigade headquarters.
Yeah.
And so of the Commonwealth Division.
Yeah.
Now, what were your first impressions of the unit when you joined them? Just do you know what I mean? Because they're Royal Signals, and you're Royal Signals, but you've never been with them. They're a specialist signals troop, so they're not.
Well, we was new enough, all the same lads. It was done basic training, virtually. We were new enough, all stuck together.
So the draft went. You formed K Troop, did you?
Oh no, K Troop was already there. That was what they called K Troop. Then we joined K Troop, all our batch. What I was with.
Now, what was the composition? What was K Troop? How big was it? How many people? What were their jobs?
Well, there was wireless operators, linemen.
How many? Roughly.
Ooh. Well, there must be at least 200 of us, I think, in K Troop. Then you had other troops there from different other. Regiments there in Brigade HQ. See, all I was involved with was the Royal Signals, really.
No, I'm just asking you about what K Troop was. It sounds an awful lot to be 200 signals in K Troop.
Yeah, hold on a minute.
That sounds like more like the whole division, Brigade headquarters.
No. No, there must be, I can't remember. Don't put down 200 in. There was five. No, it must be about 100, I suppose, signals, Royal Signals there.
And that was K Troop?
Yeah. Because some were out on the detachment anyway with brigades and that.
Now, who were your officers? Do you remember the names?
Yeah,
or?
Captain Webb.
What was he like?
He was very good.
In what way?
He was a very friendly man, and I got on quite well with him because I was the first National Serviceman to move up to NCO by him, and I think he quite liked me as well, actually.
Do you remember his first name?
No, I don't remember.
You probably wouldn't know it, would you?
And he was Lieutenant Bohannon.
Lieutenant what?
Bohannon.
What was he like?
He was quite good as well. They was all, you know, they were all quite good officers.
So you got, how did you get, what about the NCOs? How did you get on with them?
Very good, actually.
Do you remember any of them?
Yeah. Sergeant Orton. Corporal Lowen. Corporal Whelan. There was other sergeants, but I can't remember their names. But I got on quite well with them.
Now, so what was the setup at the brigade headquarters?
Yeah.
You know, the 28th brigade headquarters.
Yeah. When they said we was going from division to brigade, that was the only time I felt scared, because they said we was going forward when there was a red alert on.
You actually felt scared?
Yeah. Because we went across the pontoon bridge at the Imjin River. Then you got the 38th parallel there, so we was going into the north part of Korea. And so that was the only time I felt scared out there, really.
How bad was it? Do you think you showed it?
Apprehensive, you know. I don't think I showed it, but, you know, just inside me I felt... I mean, when you first go into a battle, you know, I suppose everyone feels that way. But after a while, you know, you become second nature like anything else.
So what happens next then? So you're going forward towards Hill 355.
Yeah. Then I think brigade was in... No, they couldn't have been in reserve, because 28 Speaking was in our brigade. So we was in the line. But I think as soon as we got there, I think they brought us back in reserve. It was only about a month in, and they brought us back in reserve.
And what happened during that month in? Do you see what I mean?
Well, in that month, I was... my job was doing the batteries, battery charging.
Now, I know it doesn't sound very interesting, but it is to us. Tell us what exactly you had to do and what equipment you had to do.
Yeah, we had a 3-kilowatt generator. And I used to put the batteries in... Bloody hell. You must charge them in parallel, I think. Charge them in parallel. I used to have a bank of batteries in parallel, used to charge that lot. Then they would go out to the sets the next day, then another lot come back in.
So, how did you set? I mean, you'd have to look after this kit generator. Was it reliable?
Yeah, very reliable.
Petrol or what?
Petrol, yeah. All petrol.
So, what did you have to do to keep that going?
Well, you just have to put the petrol in it and just get it started, and that just left it, you know.
It was that reliable.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that was very reliable.
And how
all the equipment was very reliable.
And how long would the batteries have to charge up for?
I think about 12 hours. I think 12 hours.
So what do you do in between time?
Oh, well, you have to keep looking at them, because you have to keep putting the hydrometer in and just checking, see if it was all right.
So you couldn't just go away for 12
hours. Oh no! You have to keep there. No, you wasn't on duty all that time. Someone else would come over and take over from you. But that was one of my jobs. And I was on that for a while then.
So what else would you be doing?
Well, that was just my job at that time.
That's all you did?
Yeah. Then after a while, I mean, I wasn't on it very long. Then I went into the signal truck, onto the exchange, on the, you know, telephone exchange.
Now tell me about, that's in a signal truck?
It was in a signal truck.
At brigade headquarters?
Yeah.
Now, tell me how that. What was the signal? What was in the signal truck?
Well, that's where the. That was part of the signal office as well. And that's where all the messages come in. And used to have the what they call a fuller phone. That's worked on lines back to divisional HQ. I mean, they used to send all the secret, you know, like cipher messages on those. Back to brigade.
Now, did you understand that? You'd not done the fuller phone, had you?
I hadn't done the fuller. No, because that was Morse. I didn't touch the Morse keys after basic training.
So someone else was doing that?
Oh, yeah.
So what else was in your thing? What were you doing in the signal truck?
Well, I was on the exchange, telephone exchange.
And it was all in the same truck?
In the same truck, yeah.
So tell me, you hadn't done the telephone exchange either?
No, so I was...
Tell me how... All the stuff you'd learned, you know, you weren't using.
No.
So tell me how you operated the telephone exchange.
Well, you used to, as the flap dropped down, you put the thing in and say, you know, 28 Brigade HQ, which went, well, actually it was Newcastle. We was Newcastle out.
That's your code.
Our code. And who do you want, you know, and you used to have to put them through.
How'd you put them through?
You take the next... Put one in, then you put the one,
a wire,
as in
a plug.
Banks of two. Then you receive that one, then push that one in. Then you used to have to ring it there until they answered, and then you put your phone down.
Was it difficult or was it...
Oh, no, it's quite simple, actually.
Did you have to keep cool when it got busy? I mean, I presume if something happened, it would get very busy.
Well, no, it wasn't all that very busy, really.
It was all right.
Yeah.
Any other duties?
Then after that, I was made up to signal office superintendent. I was made an NCO.
Now, when was that, though? How long were you...
That was... That must have been around about March time.
So that's after 4 months. So yeah. I don't want to go that quite that far. We'll hold that for a bit. Now, where were you living when you joined them? You know
these little bivvy tents the kids have in the garden? We had one of those, and we used to dig down. Then we had a sleeping bag, double thickness sleeping bag we used to go in. Then, because it was, this was winter time, because I'm talking around about December time now.
Just after you got there, yeah.
Yeah, December time, and after a while, my tent collapsed, so I used to go around to my mates who was on night duty and sleep in their tent. But after a while, they brought in these big marquees. And I managed to get out of a camp bed as well. So that's where we used to kip in there.
Were they dug in? Or were they?
Oh, no, there was big marquees. Then we used to have what they call a petrol burner, where one end of the up and one the other.
Of the tent?
Yeah. And they was petrol. We used to have a 50-gallon drum outside with a lead coming into these fires. And these burners used to be white hot. I mean, it was all right while you were sitting around it. You move away and you was cold. Because you're talking now in the winter, 50 below freezing. And I mean, that was cold. So, I'm just trying to think now.
So you were in these big tents.
Yeah.
And weren't they a bit vulnerable to shell fire? Or...
Bivouac
ones have been dug in.
Well, no, we only used to dig them down just to get a bit of head height.
No. Now, what about your food? What was the food rations like?
The food was
there?
Good.
In what way?
Yeah. Well, it was American food we used to have. And we used to have a good cook.
So what would you get?
Oh, used to have egg bacon and things like that. Used to have chicken and...
So you didn't have to cook the tins?
No, that was all cooked by a chef. And then...
Was there enough choice of food? Or
no choice, no.
But you didn't mind?
Didn't mind, because it was all good food.
Any other rations you got? Cigarette rations?
Oh, yeah, we used to get 50 free issue.
Now, did you smoke?
I did smoke, but that 50 free issue, I used to give to a Korean to do me washing. So he used to do all my dobing for me.
I'll come. So, I mean, did you didn't smoke that much then?
No, but I mean, a pack of 20 was a shilling, you know, the old shilling, which is 5p nowadays. But I suppose about a packet a day, I suppose.
Now, tell us about this Korean. Did you have many Korean servants about the place, or was it just?
We had two or three, and we used to have a little boy come round as well, and there was another old boy. We used to make up showers like old petrol drums with holes punched in the drums up on a gantry, and he used to go up there with the hot water and put into the drums and used to get underneath for a shower.
What else would they do for you, these servants?
Well, I only used to get them to do me washing, that's all.
And so I used maybe the washing?
Just, yeah. Well, especially during the summer when you get, you know, over 100 in the shade in the summer.
Now, in the winter, did you have a rum ration?
Yeah.
What was that? How was it issued to you?
In the tot. I remember one day, I was NCO then, and I had to draw the rum ration, and they were shouting out, rum up, and no one came round, so we had a nice... And it was like treacle, it was beautiful rum, it was. But we used to get that now and again when it was very cold.
I mean, how did you get your drinks generally? I mean, did you get it as tea or did you get it as water ration?
Water. It used to come in bowls as the water. I mean, you used to have to take Paladin tablets, you know, which was counteract any what was in the water. You used to have to take them every day.
I think that's actually malaria stuff.
No, I think it was it typhoid, is it, was it? I know we used to have so many injections, and these tablets you used to have to keep taking every day.
So there are quite a few medical things you had to do.
Oh, yeah. My medical book was full up with the injections.
Now, so what about the latrines? What were they like at the headquarters?
Well, it was just holes dug in the ground with a bit of canvas around them. And
with a pole?
Yeah. And if you want to just have a wee, you used to have a... Well, they used to put down an old shell case into the ground.
And that was it?
That was it, yeah.
Now, how cold was it? Tell us about how bad the cold was, or not, you know.
Well, it was very cold. As I say, it used to be 50 below freezing.
Now, what's that feel like, as far as you
can show? It was very cold. Well, our equipment, we used to have two pair of socks. Used to have boots with a aerated sole inside, so it keeps the warm air flowing round. You had ordinary... No, you didn't. Used to have long pants, go all the way down with a split up the front and the back, so you didn't have to take those down at all. And you had double thickness nylon trousers. You had a string vest, ordinary vest, shirt, a long sleeve pullover. Then you had a big one that went up, but tied round the neck. You had a tunic, 3/4 length, nylon, and then you had a fur coat on top, which was lamb's wool inside. Well, they said it cost £100 then, and you used to have a hood and a buckle round you tied up. You used to have gloves, then long gloves, what came up to there with a tie that went round your neck. Then you had your beret on top, and this hood, which you could squeeze down, and you're still cold.
It's still cold.
Yeah. But I think we must have been the best dressed troops out there, I think.
Now, what was a typical day like then when you were out there, you know?
Well, every day you had a shift in the office. The 3rd Royal Australian Regiment used to come into our office with all their casualties. The other battalions used to send their own through their own network, but all the Australian casualties came through our office. And sometimes when there was a battle on, I'd have about 4 or 5 sheets of A4 of soldiers killed, wounded, missing, or killed, wounded, missing.
Prisoner.
Or prisoners, yeah. Or missing in action, yeah. So that used to come through our office. And they would be sent on to DivHQ, and then that would go to Australia.
You'd just ring them up, would you? Tell them.
They would ring us up, you know, when there was a battle on with their injury.
And you'd pass it on.
Details, and we'd pass it on.
So what else would you
do? And they was all... Operation immediate messages, you know, top messages, very urgent ones.
That's one thing. What
just
else?
Normal routine, you know, tying up with DivHQ and the other detachments, on detachments with the battalions. They would come back into the signal office. So it was quite busy, you know. Then you'd only do so many hours and so many hours off. Then we, every third night, used to do a full night on duty. And then every third night, you have to do a guard patrol as well. So you was kept very busy.